It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We have to have borders, and we have to have them fast. And we need security. We need the wall. We're going to have it all. And again, that wall has started. We got $1.6 billion. We come up again on September 28th. And if we don't get border security, we'll have no choice. We'll close down the country because we need border security.
That was President Donald Trump a Saturday night at a rally in Washington County, Michigan. I don't know if you saw it, but it was terrific. I mean, you may have heard clips. They always pull out the his moments when he's actually being funny, and that's what they play so people can think he's stupid. But listen, President Trump is not stupid, and the rally was inspiring. And if you haven't seen it, you might want to watch it. I watched every minute of it. I really, really enjoyed it. He encourages me. Because he speaks common sense. And, of course, as he is saying that about how we need borders, we are watching the spectacle of what's happening at the southern border when this so-called caravan has made their way through Central America. It's not like there are sympathetic figures. It's not like these people are fleeing for their lives and begging to get across. No, they're demanding. They had a party. Saturday night laughing, you know, demanding through attorneys their rights to claim asylum in the United States. You probably saw pictures of them sitting on the wall, a few of them. It's a very high wall, so not everyone can climb that high. According to William LaJeunesse, nobody has jumped over, at least not as of last night, because it's quite a ways down. But they sit like flaunting, just so daring the U.S. to do something. The irony, it's not irony, it's just what happened. The U.S. border security forces are not allowing them in. They turned them back yesterday and said that they are filled up, they cannot process, so they'll have to wait. So we don't exactly know what that means. You know, where are they going to wait? Are they going to have to stay in Mexico, which is probably what should happen. They should be forced to stay in Mexico. And let Mexico deal with this because they allowed them to march across their country on their way to the United States border. It seems to me, I had heard earlier that Mexico was cooperating with us to stop this. Doesn't look like that's happened so much. I understand that of several couples, young people have married because somehow, according to our laws, they perform ceremonies right there because allegedly that helps them get into the country more easily. And they're using, of course, every possible hook they can to get into the country. And they're being coached. There are more people traveling with them, coaching them, immigration attorneys, activists, than there are migrants. Interlopers, invaders, let's just say that. William LaJeunesse had an interesting back and forth last night on Fox. You'll just hear William's part of it, but he's talking about what you know, you and I both know, I've talked about this enough, that they don't come to the border, you know, automatically, you know, begging for asylum because they don't know what they should say. But trust me, they've been prepped. Let's listen to William.
To my knowledge, no one actually went over the wall. That was a primary fence. The Border Patrol was only yards away from that. They were there making a statement. And this is a very high-profile thing, has international attention. What the U.S. obviously does not want to do is send a message that if these individuals, this caravan was allowed in, the fear is in the U.S. side that you'd have another caravan leaving Central America tomorrow. And that is why the president, of course, has been complaining about the law. However, the law says, from what I am told, that everyone who presents themselves with a legitimate asylum case has a right to be heard, and even if they're denied a credible fear interview, they have a right to see an immigration judge. That's why this thing is a big deal. And I'm going to send it back to you, but right now, this is paralyzed right now as if they're going to go to the border or not. I've talked to, obviously, the attorneys, but as well as many of the immigrants, and they say they're not being coached on exactly what to say, but they are being told what kind of a message will get through and what one what would not. So you can kind of take it for what you will, whether it's deliberate or simply implied as to what type of claim, if you will be heard or looked on favorably. Hey, they've gone through four different legal counseling sessions, so any immigrant who knows what they're going to say is going to know what they're going to say after going to all four of those.
You know, I just remember when the invasion happened last year, they were being coached to use the word asylum. They didn't even speak English, but they were given the right phrases to say. So this is how it goes. The activists coach them, and then they make sure they have legal, as soon as their feet touch the soil, that they've got, you know, what, everything they need, legal counsel, money, passage to, you know, any someplace in the United States, to a neighborhood near you. This is how it goes. And again, this is not about, from my perspective, there may be some there who desperately need help. But you know what? A lot of Americans desperately need help right now, too. And I just think it's time to shut it down. I'm with the president. It's time to shut down. We cannot allow this. We can't allow this. You can't have a nation without borders. You just can't. You know, it reminds me of the rise and fall of the Roman Empire. I don't know if you ever read that. I remember making my way through it when I was much younger. One of the things about Rome that brought it down was that they had the what they called the invasion of the northern hordes, the barbars. They were called the barbarians because of their language. It sounded like barbar. And so that was just one of the many factors that went into the fall of Rome, because they could not to control their population. So it's just, look, the Bible speaks of walls. We understand the need for walls, the need for doors and locks. It just defies common sense that you would think a nation would not need those. But that's what's happening on the southern border. One maybe glimmer of hope, not related to the border, but related to immigration, is that the Supreme Court last Wednesday heard arguments against President Donald Trump's restrictions on travel from dangerous countries. You remember that so-called Muslim ban where, you know, that included Venezuela and North Korea? The Solicitor General of the United States, Noel Francisco, presented the president's side, and the activists presented the other side. It was out of Hawaii that the case was brought, if you recall. Now, my understanding is that the folks like Noel Francisco, who presented the president's argument, did a great job. And the guy representing Hawaii did a really crummy job. I have to say to you, that doesn't mean it's going to go well. You know, it doesn't. Seems to not matter. But at least those in the courtroom there said it went very well. By the way, in attendance on Wednesday hearing was Lin-Manuel Miranda, author of the Broadway musical Hamilton. It's just an interesting fact. And my husband reminded me that 3 years ago this week, he and I were in the courtroom when the arguments in favor of gay marriage were made before the Supreme Court. I'll never forget that. It's a small room, well, relatively small, and it was filled with gay activists. It was a surreal moment. And I have to say, just this is a different subject, but just because I'm speaking of it, the arguments from the side of defending traditional marriage were so embarrassingly weak. So weak. It was unbelievable. And one would have to say it's no wonder the court decided the way they did based on those arguments. But we'll see what happens with this ban. Here we are 3 years later and see what's happened. Isn't it wonderful? Yeah, we have this new way of understanding things. I want to go back to the rally in Michigan on Saturday night, because one of the other things that the president did was call out Senator John Tester from Montana. He did that for a reason. You've probably been hearing that Dr. Ronny Jackson, who was also an admiral, who was the president's doctor, who was Obama's doctor, and before that George W. Bush's doctor, everybody has raved about him. The president nominated him to be Secretary of the Veterans Affairs. And you may recall then when it came down to the hearing, suddenly John Tester comes out with these accusations that he's the candy man, handing out drugs, that he wrecked vehicles because he's known for drunkenness. And you remember that Admiral Jackson said, these are not true. I don't know what they're talking about. But in the ensuing 48 hours, he ended up withdrawing his nomination because the president said to him, if I were you, I wouldn't. You'd have my permission to withdraw. You don't have to put yourself through that because. And now we find out the Secret Service investigated these allegations that John Tester presented in writing and found out that there's no truth to any of it. No truth. Zero, zip, ned, nada. So in the period of 2 or 3 days, they have trashed Admiral/Dr. Ronnie Jackson and ruined any chance of President Trump using him as the head of Veterans Affairs. Besmirched what, by all accounts, is an honorable man, by accounts of three presidents, if you believe their word. Great guy. They say it in various ways, but they all say it. He was their personal physician, after all. It wasn't anything he didn't know about them, so they trusted him for that. And they managed to trash him. And Donald Trump addressed that on Saturday night and said John Tester should resign. He should be embarrassed. And he talked about how the left is destroying people, destroying their reputations, just throwing things out and ruining their lives. And he's right. Is he not right? We have to have this stop. And I don't know. How do you know? I mean, they've done that to Justice Moore. I mean, I hear jokes about him. I heard one at the correspondents' dinner Saturday night. They have destroyed the reputation of a really fine man. And that's what they do. And the problem is that so many of us are prone to believe the worst stuff. It's you put a taint on somebody and that's it. They're icky. They've got cooties. You fill in the blank about the social consequences of this kind of criticism. And we have to somehow tweak a knob in our own minds to not automatically believe what's happening and what's being alleged. And you're going to see this in the elections in your various states. The primaries are going to start rolling out here, and you're going to hear some horrible things. Now, how are you to think? You know, how are you to think about this stuff when you see these ads? I just say, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Don't be quick to believe everything that you hear. You certainly, and sometimes with this campaign ads, you know, you're not sure who's producing it. If you can find out, then that will help you. And I'll do my best. You know, but there's hundreds of races. I can't possibly help with all of this. But do not rush to believe the trash that's going to be falling out and the way they successfully ruin people's lives. Don't buy into that automatically, please. There was huge news over the weekend, and that is, I'll read it from CNN. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will shut down his nuclear test site in May and invite experts and journalists from South Korea and the United States into the country to ensure transparency around its closure. In the latest breakthrough on the peninsula, ahead of the meeting between Kim and U.S. President Donald Trump, who said Saturday that talks could take place within 3 to 4 weeks. By the way, Kim has said something like, please, you know, America, please don't, if America will promise, please not to attack us. He's actually worried about that. And so this is a stunning development, an absolutely stunning development. But caution, here's National Security Advisor John Bolton with a caution.
So there are these headlines that from South Korea saying Kim Jong-un would abandon his weapons if the U.S. promises not to invade his country. Are you going to make any kind of promise like that?
Well, we've heard this before. This is the North Korean propaganda playbook is an infinitely rich resource.
But it puts a burden on the United States.
I don't think it does, really. I think that if you look at the decision to give up nuclear weapons as a real strategic decision that North Korea has to make, what we want to see from them is evidence that it's real and not just rhetoric. In the case of Libya, for example, and it's a different situation in some respects, those negotiations were carried out in private. They were not known publicly. But one thing that Libya did that led us to overcome our skepticism was that they allowed American and British observers into all their nuclear-related sites. So it wasn't
all right, that's
a question
former Ambassador John Bolton, National Security Advisor to the President. And I have to say, be encouraged that Ambassador Bolton is in that position. Be encouraged, because this is a smart, wise man. I think I hear trust but verify, don't you? And should we not always do that? What happened to that kind of common sense? Coming back next, we'll talk about the Washington Correspondents' Dinner. It was amazing. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hi, I'm J.J. Jasper. Do you know what a snail says riding on a turtle's back? Whee! That's how I feel about being at this year's Fishbowl Retreat. I'll be sharing some laughs and encouragement with you, and my wife Melanie will be speaking as well.
The annual AFA Pastors and Wife Fishbowl Retreat is coming October 9th through the 11th, and already the event is filling up. Our hosts will be Pastor Bert Harper of Exploring the Word and his wife Jan, and our guest speakers will be AFR morning personality J.J. Jasper and his wife Melanie. Come refresh, renew, and relax. The AFA Fishbowl Retreat will be held at Linden Valley Conference Center in Linden, Tennessee. Registration is limited to the first 35 couples. Register soon by calling 800-326-4543, extension 300, or visit repairingthefoundations.net.
Come join us at the annual AFA Fishbowl Retreat, October the 9th through the 11th.
The influence of media is so very powerful over a person.
American Family Association and the family of Anna Bright want to warn you about the Netflix program 13 Reasons Why.
I really feel in my heart, with all my soul, that that show contributed to her passing.
After binge-watching season one of 13 Reasons Why, 14-year-old Anna Bright committed suicide in the same manner depicted on the show.
To portray suicide, first of all, as an option, is not a good thing. To portray it graphically, it leaves you vulnerable to the enemy's attack, which I think it definitely did for our daughter.
She took a permanent solution to a temporary situation.
Help protect our teens by signing the AFA petition urging Netflix to pull Season 1 and cancel the upcoming Season 2 of 13 Reasons Why. You can see Anna's story and sign the petition at AFA.net. That's AFA.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The U.S. Navy is investigating complaints about a Bible's inclusion on a missing man table erected at the Naval Hospital in Okinawa, Japan. The table tribute honors prisoners of war and those missing in action. Along with the Bible, there was a placard that declared, "We are one nation under God." The Military Religious Freedom Foundation was grossly triggered by that statement, calling it unconstitutional and a slap in the face to every non-Christian. It's not clear why the Navy is investigating, because according to its own protocols, the Bible and the placard are supposed to be a part of the tribute. You can read more about that at my website, toddstearns.com. This is nothing more than a despicable attack by the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and it's time for the Pentagon to stop this radical group from bullying military families and desecrating any more missing man tables. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Good evening. Good evening. Here we are, the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I'm going to skip a lot of the normal pleasantries. We're at a Hilton. It's not nice. This is on C-SPAN. No one watches that. Trump is president. It's not ideal. I'm here to make jokes. I have no agenda. I'm not trying to get anything accomplished. So everyone that's here from Congress, you should feel right at home. Now, before we get too far, a little bit about me. A lot of you might not know who I am. I'm 32 years old, which is an odd age, 10 years too young to host this event, and 20 years too old for Roy Moore. I know, he almost got elected, yeah. It was fun. It is kind of crazy that the Trump campaign was in contact with Russia when the Hillary campaign wasn't even in contact with Michigan. It's a direct flight. It's so close. People call Trump names all the time. And look, I could call Trump a racist or a misogynist or xenophobic or unstable or incompetent or impotent. But he's heard all of those and he doesn't care. So tonight, I'm going to try to make fun of the president in a new way, in a way that I think will really get him. Mr. President, I don't think you're very rich. Like, I think you might be rich in Idaho, but in New York, you're doing fine. Trump is the only person that still watches who wants to be a millionaire and thinks, me. Although I'm not sure you'd get very far. He'd get to like the third question and be like, I have to phone a Fox and Friend.
All right, that was Michelle Wolf, and that happened at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner in D.C. on Saturday night, the same time President Trump held his rally in Washington County, Michigan, just north of Detroit. Of course, President Trump decided not to go. It's tradition for presidents to come and be roasted and for them to stand and do a comedy routine themselves. But the president, because the worm has turned, let's just say the Correspondents' Dinner has become a place of vitriol and hatefulness. Now, that was the beginning of Michelle Wolf's monologue. It lasted almost 20 minutes, and that was mild compared to what actually happened. I'm going to give you an idea. And remember, she said to us in the opening that she had no, you know, she didn't have a bias. She didn't have an axe to grind. She didn't feel one way or the other. But then she proceeded to, as though she didn't do that in the opening monologue, to sort of show us that that was not true. And I have to say, if you have not heard this already, you need to know. It was vile and vulgar. Just an embarrassment. This takes place in the Washington Hilton. I've been there myself. It is the room filled with the people that, you know, are in the East Room of the White House with the press briefings. They're the people that cover President Donald Trump and his staff. That's who's in the room. Plus, usually it's congressmen. It's a huge event. It's like 1,000 people in the room. It's anybody that is anybody in news and media. Including congressmen, too, mixed with the power brokers of Washington. Reince Priebus was there, Kellyanne Conway, Sarah Sanders Huckabee, which you'll see in a second. She was on the dais sitting just two people down from Michelle Wolf. And that's significant in a second. You'll hear why that's significant. But generally speaking, it's a roast, people make fun of each other, but it's all in, there's like a line. It's all in good taste. Michelle didn't have any lines whatsoever. And I want to give you an idea of the kinds of things that she said. This is when she moved to Vice President Mike Pence. Let's listen.
A lot of people want Trump to be impeached. I do not. Because just when you think Trump is awful, you remember Mike Pence. Mike Pence is what happens when Anderson Cooper isn't gay. Mike Pence is the kind of guy that brushes his teeth and then drinks orange juice and thinks, mmm. Mike Pence is also very anti-choice. He thinks abortion is murder, which, first of all, don't knock it till you try it. And when you do try it, really knock it. You know, you gotta get that baby out of there. And yeah, sure, you can groan all you want. I know a lot of you are very anti-abortion, you know, unless it's the one you got for your secret mistress. It's fun how values can waver. But good for you. Mike Pence is a weirdo, though. He's a weird little guy. He won't meet with other women without his wife present. When people first heard this, they were like, that's crazy. But now in this current climate, they're like, that's a good witness. I did have a lot of jokes. I had a lot of jokes about cabinet members, but I had to scrap all of those because everyone has been fired. You guys are going through cabinet members quicker than Starbucks throws out black people. No, don't worry. They're having an afternoon. That'll solve it.
All right, that's enough of that.
We just needed it.
The abortion part, I just thought, that's when things started turning. And people started realizing, look, we can't play 30% of what she said because it is so vulgar. I couldn't do her opening remarks on Trump because even it's not just the words, it's the context. It's just filthy concept after filthy concept. But we're trying to pull out things that you can hear that are not vulgar, but are crass, mean, just really beneath an event like this, the Washington Correspondents, the White House Correspondents' Dinner? Are you kidding me? Okay, here's Michelle Wolf. Now, Kellyanne Conway is in the audience, and she looks absolutely gorgeous. Sarah Sanders is on the dais in a beautiful blue dress, and she looks absolutely gorgeous, and yet this is what they had to listen to.
We should definitely talk about the women in the Trump administration. There's Kellyanne Conway. Man, she has the perfect last name for what she does. Conway. You guys gotta stop putting Kellyanne on your shows. All she does is lie. If you don't give her a platform, she has nowhere to lie. It's like that old saying, if a tree falls in the woods, how do we get Kellyanne under that tree? I'm not suggesting she gets hurt, just stuck. Stuck under a tree. And of course we have Sarah Huckabee Sanders. We are graced with Sarah's presence tonight. I have to say, I'm a little starstruck. I love you as Aunt Lydia in The Handmaid's Tale. Mike Pence, if you haven't seen it, you would love it. Every time Sarah steps up to the podium, I get excited because I'm not really sure what we're going to get. You know, a press briefing, a bunch of lies, or divided into softball teams. It's shirts and skins, and this time don't be such a little Jim Acosta. I actually really like Sarah. I think she's very resourceful. Like, she burns facts, and then she uses that ash to create a perfect smoky eye. Like, maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's lies. And I'm never really sure what to call Sarah Huckabee Sanders. You know, is it Sarah Sanders? Is it Sarah Huckabee Sanders? Is it Cousin Huckabee? Is it Auntie Huckabee Sanders? Like, what's Uncle Tom but for white women who disappoint other white women? Oh, I know, Aunt Coulter.
All right, so that's Michelle Wolf, you know, berating in their presence Kellyanne and Sarah. And of course, the cameras panned to Kellyanne and Sarah, and they both never lost their dignity. Others were appalled. In fact, Matt Schlapp and Mercedes Schlapp. Matt is, of course, the head of the American Conservative Union. You've seen him a lot on television. He has real white hair. I've known Matt since he worked in the Bush White House. He really is a great guy. And Mercedes Schlapp is his wife. She's the beautiful pundit on Fox occasionally, but now she's moved to the White House communications team, so you don't see her as often. But Matt and Mercedes were tweeting through the whole thing that when everything turned, they just couldn't stand it, and they ended up leaving, which is what I would have to do. When they were panning in the audience, they showed Reince Priebus kind of yucking it up. Now, he's tweeted that he was appalled by it, but he surely never let on while he was there. It was amazing to me how people feel the peer pressure to approve. Why do we do that? Even in movies, we're watching something and it's vile and we think we have to be quiet. We are compliant. We acquiesce when we sit in silence, as far as I'm concerned, with things that are just morally reprehensible. Obviously, there are things that you don't comment or get up off, things that you just disagree with, but when it's morally reprehensible, it's time to do something. You know, don't lack courage. Speak up. People should speak up. People should have booed her. They should have hissed. They should have gotten up, or they should have, I don't know. There should have been more response. I recognize from all accounts, she was not well received. You could hear people cheering and laughing. So some people thought it was great. And you can see that by their comments afterwards. But most people still sat through it and didn't get up, and they should have. They should have. So God bless Matt Schlapp and Mercedes for doing that. Michelle, I'm going to move ahead. We're going to do this last clip. Remember, she told us she has, she doesn't have really an opinion. She's not really a news person. She's just coming to make jokes. So this is a little bit of one more clip, clip five, that'll show you that maybe that's not exactly true.
There's a lot of print media here. There's a ton of you guys, but I'm not going to go after print media tonight because it's illegal to attack an endangered species. There's a ton of news right now. A lot is going on, and we have all these 24-hour news networks, and we could be covering everything, but instead we're covering like three topics. Every
okay.
hour
that's
it's
clip
Trump,
four.
Russia,
I want to. I want to clip five.
Well, they remind you for Thanksgiving. Milk comes from nuts now, all because of the gays. You guys are obsessed with Trump. Did you used to date him? Because you pretend like you hate him, but I think you love him. I think what no one in this room wants to admit is that Trump has helped all of you. He couldn't sell steaks or vodka or water or college or ties or Eric. But he has helped you. He's helped you sell your papers and your books and your TV. You helped create this monster, and now you're profiting off of him. And if you're gonna profit off of Trump, you should at least give him some money because he doesn't have any.
All right, that was Michelle Wolf at the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday night while President Trump was in Washington, Michigan, rallying the troops. If you watch the two events, which I have watched, I didn't watch all the Correspondents' Dinner. I did watch all of Trump's rally. The contrast is just amazing. The refreshing touch of Americana, the excitement, the message of hope, really. President Trump talked about the economy growing. He talked about the jobs. He talked about trade, and he was very honest. You know, he talked about how these new deals that he's writing, there may be some pain for a while. There may be some pain for a while, but you're going to be glad in the long run. We're doing what's best with America's interests, even though in the interim, some businesses, some other groups may suffer a little bit from the consequences of the tariffs or whatever are instituted. I just thought, you know, before he spoke, Judith Miller, who is the journalist who was made famous by being put in jail for not leaking her sources. Judith is a Fox News contributor, made the statement just before the rally that Trump lies 67% of the time. That's what she said before he came on. You know, I just don't find that to be true. I don't think he's honest like Abraham Lincoln, and I think he overstates and exaggerates, but I think for the most part he actually is an honest man, and I couldn't help but think of Judith Miller. This woman, Judith Miller, who you may watch on Fox and you think, well, she sounds like she understands, you know, she's just fair-minded. Let me tell you, Judith Miller was the reporter that caused Scooter Libby to go to prison. We have not discussed this, but I'm gonna spend a little more time on this at some point, maybe with Victoria Tensing, who was one of the attorneys in that case. But Scooter Libby was the aide to Vice President Dick Cheney, and Vice President Dick Cheney was so hated, you might remember that. He was one of the people during the Bush administration that the press and the swamp destroyed his reputation. At least they certainly tried, and they actually wanted to destroy him. It's not enough to destroy the reputation. They actually wanted to destroy the people as well. And they tried their best, and they went after Scooter Libby, trying to get him to turn, to tell them to whatever, to tell them something about Dick Cheney that would enable them to bring him down. And out of that came this whole Valerie Plame, Joe Wilson scandal, where supposedly Valerie Plame was outed in an act of vengeance by Scooter Libby as a CIA operative, putting her life at danger. That was the premise. You know, that was a total sham. It was a total sham. And even the prosecutors, Pat Fitzgerald and James Comey, knew that the person who told pretty much everyone that Valerie Plame was a CIA operative working in an office, was a Richard Armitage, who was working with Barack Obama. In fact, Richard Armitage confessed that, but Patrick Fitzgerald and the other prosecutors and Miss Reporter, who went to jail out of such a sense of honor, knew it was not Scooter Libby, and yet they stood by, they convicted him of a crime, and he went to prison, lost his law license, they destroyed him. They couldn't get Cheney, but they got Scooter Libby, who President Trump just pardoned. And so that's Judith Miller, who declared that Trump was lying 67% of the time. That's a little background so you understand what's going on here and has been going on for a very long time. When we return, I want to talk about James Comey with Brett Baer. That was pretty incredible, wasn't it? So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What would it take for you to compromise your principles? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Recently, I heard a statement that went like this. I don't think principles matter if you can't get elected. Principles form the core of who you are. Principles form the foundation of a civil society. George Washington, in his farewell address, identified religion and morality as indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, George Washington said. It makes me think of a scripture. What would it profit a man to gain the whole world yet lose his soul? What would it profit a candidate to gain an election but lose his principles?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman.
So who is responsible for the dysfunction in Washington? That's what we're going to be discussing today.
We have become one of the most litigious societies on the planet.
The goal of this show is to bring clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C., and to expose the deception that has plagued our nation's capital for decades.
Exposing Washington.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central.
On American Family Radio.
The National Day of Prayer is coming up.
When Congress is in session every Monday, over 100 congressmen come together to pray together. There are prayer groups who are involved in praying in Washington every single day.
Gather with others at your local city hall on May 3rd to pray for our nation. And listen to the In God We Trust radio special with Dave Butts, president of Harvest Prayer Ministries and chairman of the National Day of Prayer, this afternoon at 2:30 on American Family Radio.
Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. You know, we just got back from Southeast Houston. We were there from March 10th to March 24th. We did our first ever back-to-back trips. That's right, 8 Days of Hope 14 and 15. Saw 4,692 volunteers come from all over the country. In fact, from all over the world. And God allowed us to help 844 families rebuild their homes. Some got brand new roofs. Some picked out brand new kitchen sets. We put flooring in, insulation, drywall. It wasn't just the rebuilding work that was done, because about $10.4 million of work was done for free, but it was the lives that were impacted for Jesus. We had volunteers and homeowners alike fall on their knees and say yes to our Father in heaven. Thank you so much. And that's why we do 8 Days of Hope. Hey, if you're interested in being part of 8 Days of Hope, just go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and we'll contact you anytime we go anywhere to love and serve those in need.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Civilization Jihad is underway in Michigan. That's the stealthy, subversive warfare the Muslim Brotherhood employs to, quote, destroy Western civilization from within, unquote. The Brotherhood and other Sharia supremacists insinuate themselves and their influence operation into government, the media, schools, popular culture, businesses, and other faith communities and politics. And anyone who notices, let alone objects, is slandered as an Islamophobe and bigot. That's what's happening at the moment to State Senator Patrick Kolbeck, who is running for Michigan governor in a crowded field that includes a suave doctor with unacknowledged ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, Abdul El Sayed. And prominent figures on both sides of the political aisle are submitting to demands to denounce Senator Kolbeck and suppress his warnings. Such appeasement will intensify, not terminate, the threat Sharia supremacism poses to Michigan and America, and must be opposed. This is Frank Affney. Learn the facts about Sharia supremacism at securefreedom.org.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Embarrassed and ashamed by the way the Republican Party has abandoned one of the two things that led me to consider myself a Republican in the 1980s when Ronald Reagan was president. I was attracted by the notion that character matters and values matter most of all. That's where you start in evaluating a person, an entity, a country. What are their values?
Well, this is ridiculous. The American people are so fed up with this two standards, one standard for us regular folk and different standard if your name is Clinton, Comey, Lynch, Lerner. That's what American people are fed up. And the fact that five of the top people, this is what should concern Mr. Comey. He's been fired. Andrew McCabe has been fired for lying four times, three times under oath. Jim Baker, former chief counsel, has been demoted and reassigned at the FBI. Peter Strzok, deputy head of counterintelligence, demoted, reassigned. Lisa Page, FBI counsel, demoted, reassigned. these are the top people at the FBI. That's what he should be concerned about and what the American people are rightfully concerned about. And I would also add, the American people thought the fix was in on the Clinton investigation. But since we got a hold of the page struck text messages, we know the fix was in. So that's what should concern James Comey. This idea that he's embarrassed is just ridiculous.
He just insulted 44% of the.
All right. That was, of course, James Comey doing his many, many, many appearances on his book, Higher Loyalty, about his integrity, how wonderful he is. Remember, he told us, people are hearing from Donald Trump now, but soon they'll hear from me. And they'll hear something about, they'll see what real integrity and honor is about. I'm telling you, it's not working that way. It's just not working that way. I just don't understand how a person can twist and turn so many things. If you saw his interview with Bret Baier on Thursday night, and if you did not, we're going to post this on our Facebook page. And I ask you, watch the whole thing, its entirety, and see what you think. Common sense can help you, can guide you, and how you, in just a sense of truth, can help you figure out, even if you don't know the details of all the things that Brett is asking him, you can see right away that this man is dancing. He's dancing. He's going back and forth. He says more often than not, "I don't recall. I don't recall that. I don't know. I don't know about that. I'm not sure." Constantly, he was the Federal Bureau of Investigation director, and he's not sure about more things that he's sure about. He's sure that Trump is not worthy. Brett kind of pushed him to the wall on this. You know, you have said that he is like a mafia boss. You said that Trump is unfit for duty. You've said he said any number of things like that, and yet you would have still been serving under him. Brett did an excellent job. And by the way, the incredible thing is that James Comey was late to the interview. Now, you know, I have to tell you that Washington traffic on Friday nights is terrible, D.C. traffic. But you know what? Everybody knows that. So if you have an interview at 6 o'clock and you have to get to the bureau, and everybody knows where the Fox Bureau is, it's right by CNN, it's by MSNBC, they're all in the same building. You know exactly where that is. It's not a mystery. And I doubt very much that James Comey drove himself. Even if he did. So you have to leave early. So he calls Bret Baier. He texts on his way and says, "I'm stuck in traffic." So he was late by 15 minutes. I'm wondering if he didn't hope that he could sort of miss the interview because he knew Bret would be tough with him. And what happened was, you know, Bret started the interview 15 minutes later than they had planned. And then he had to really rapid fire the questions. But he did. And he did a great job, I have to say. And so I have to play part of this for you in case you missed it. But I really encourage you to go on our Facebook page and hear the entire thing just for yourself. Just watch for yourself. This is the former director of the FBI being interviewed by Bret Baier on his new book, you know, Higher Loyalty. Yeah, Higher Loyalty. I'm not sure where his higher loyalty is. But I digress. All right, let's listen to this first clip. This is Comey answering questions from Brett on the Steele dossier.
When did you learn that the DNC and Hillary Clinton campaign had funded Christopher Steele's work?
Yeah, I still don't know that for a fact.
What do you mean?
I've only seen it in the media. I never knew exactly which Democrats had funded. I knew it was funded first by Republicans, opposed to Donald.
But that's not true.
I'm sorry?
That's not true. That the dossier that Christopher Steele worked on was funded by Republicans?
Yeah, my understanding was his work started funded by Oppo Research, funded by Republicans.
So Free Beacon and said that they had Glenn Simpson and Fusion GPS on a kind of a retainer, but they did not fund the Christopher Steele memo or the dossier. That was initiated by Democrats.
Okay, my understanding was the activity was begun, that Steele was hired to look into, was first funded by Republicans, then picked up, the important thing was, picked up by Democrats opposed to Donald Trump.
So is that why, did you tell President Obama that the dossier was ever, who it was funded by?
No, not to my recollection.
Did you want to know who it was funded by?
I wanted to know what I knew, which is it was funded by people politically opposed to Donald Trump.
Okay.
Which particular opponents wasn't that important?
But when
to me.
Did you? So you still to this day don't know that it was funded by the DNC or
I've read
the
that in the
campaign?
Media, but I don't know for a fact and didn't know while I was at the FBI which exact opponent of the president's funded that.
You know, that's just laughable. That sounds like Barack Obama. Do you remember when he was president and they'd ask him a hard question? Well, I heard that in the news. I didn't really know. I heard that in the news, just like you. like he doesn't know, like he doesn't have other sources. So you know what? It is well known that Hillary Clinton and the DNC paid for that dossier. That's not hard to find out. And if he didn't know, then he was either incompetent or, like they say, he's lying. But I'm in fact, this House Intelligence Committee issued their report saying that there was no collusion. They issued it last week. Of course, Comey says that it's a political document. It wrecked the August panel. It's just a wreck, he said. It damaged relationships with the FISA court. By the way, Congressman Louie Gohmert will be my guest tomorrow. We'll ask him about this. But in addition to that, the report says in detail who funded this dossier. And it looks like it was a group of wealthy donors from New York and California. They put $50 million into it. And one of them was George Soros, at least according to the people involved in it. I know that's a shock, but the FBI director, you know, he didn't know. He's just not sure. He's just not sure who funded that. Yet he briefed the president on it. And by the way, Mark Meadows has some great questions that he did an article in. I don't know where it was in, but we should put this on our Facebook page too. James Comey probably misled Congress. Now he must be. It must answer these five questions. And one of them is, why did Comey leave out pertinent facts when he briefed then-President-elect Trump on the Russian dossier? And he talks about why did he leave out the fact that it was funded by the Hillary campaign and the DNC? And Meadows says, if this briefing on the dossier was truly in the president's interest, as Comey claims, then it's certainly curious as to why this information was not shared. And then the next part of this is that it looks as though Comey and James Clapper coordinated to give that Russian dossier credibility and leak its contents. Because remember that, well, okay, I'm going to tell you, you might not recall this as I do, that the dossier was not yet public when Comey briefed President Trump. And they weren't, no media outlet was running with it because it was just ridiculous. It was like tabloid ridiculousness, as I have said many, many times. I remember sitting at this microphone when I first heard of it. I read it and I said to you, you might recall, this is ridiculous. Who would believe this? Hiring prostitutes to urinate on a bed where President Obama and Michelle had slept? And so everyone knew, and that's why they didn't run with it. So it looks like the story goes that Clapper and James Comey, now this is an accusation, probably true though, worked together to have Comey go, to try to find a way to have CNN be able to go public with it. And the way they decided to do that, it sounds like, is that they decided to have Comey go in and supposedly brief the president in the guise of trying to help him, when in fact they were trying to create a news hook, an excuse to talk about the dossier and actually say what was in it. And so a few days after Comey briefed the president to help him, you know, he's just helping him, CNN ran with it. And then BuzzFeed printed the whole thing. And that's how it started. And by the way, Comey said in his interview with Brett Baer that Brett asked him if he had met with John Brennan or James Clapper. And he said, yes, just two nights ago, we went out with our wives, the six of us. And then Brett says, did you talk about this? Oh, no, we didn't talk about that. And then that reminded me, recall last week I told you about James Comey's wife and daughters going to the Women's March and the interview that that his wife did with Anderson Cooper talking about how much she hated Trump? Yeah, so no doubt they had a great time at that dinner, but I'm sure they did not talk about any of this. At least that's what Comey, the trustworthy, honorable man that he is, has to say for himself about that. Let's go to Clip 7, Brett Baer.
You called the dossier unverified, salacious. Why did you use that to the FISA court to ask for surveillance for Carter Page? Not only use it, but you led with it. A bulk of that FISA application deals with that dossier. Why?
Yeah, that's not my recollection, Brett. And I don't know that the FISA application has been released. My recollection was it was part of a broader mosaic of facts that were laid before the FISA judge to obtain a FISA warrant.
There was a lot more than the dossier in the FISA application?
My recollection was there was a significant amount of additional material about Page and why there was probable cause to believe he was an agent of a foreign power. And the dossier was part of that, but was not all of it or a critical part of it, to my recollection.
So after this intel briefing at Trump Tower, you briefed the president-elect on kind of the sliver of the dossier, really the salacious part about the prostitutes in Moscow and that allegation.
Correct.
Didn't include anything broader than that, right?
Correct. My mission in that private briefing was just to tell him about that slice of it.
And who suggested you brief that?
I think the director of national intelligence did, and explained the logic of why it made sense for me to do it, which I agreed with.
So that briefing was just oral. It was just talking to the
president. Correct. Just the two of us talking to each other.
CNN reported at the time that you handed a two-page executive summary of the dossier over to him.
I did not.
But he doesn't recall, really. Okay, so the director of the CIA, John Brennan, who just went to lunch with Comey with his wife and James Clapper, who many people believe are the wizard behind the curtain, wizards behind the curtain. John Brennan tweeted after the House Intelligence Committee published their report exonerating the president. This is what CIA Director John Brennan, the man who voted for the Communist Party candidate in 1980 and who boasted to people wanting to join the CIA that they didn't have to any longer worry about background checks or things like involvement with the Communist Party, because look at him. But I digress. So John Brennan tweeted, "A highly partisan, incomplete, and deeply flawed report by a broken House committee means nothing. The special counsel's work is being carried out by professional investigators, not political staffers. SC's findings will be comprehensive and authoritative. Stay tuned, Mr. Trump." Okay. So, but, you know, he has no opinion about this. And when Comey and his their wives were together a couple of nights ago, trust me, they didn't say, there was no discussion about that, right? Let me just say that at the same time last week, speaking of Director Mueller, the Senate Judiciary Committee approved legislation Thursday to protect Special Counsel Mueller, which John Brennan was bragging about their wonderful work. And could I just say that Bob Mueller is not the person, just as James Comey, we're finding out, is not the person the media has pumped up to us, and neither was Robert Mueller. We were told by the media, we were told by Republican establishment, how wonderful this man is. He's just, there doesn't get any better. Talk about integrity and intelligence and competence. He is like the cream of the crop. He is the king of the hill. You know what? Many of us know that's not true. And now Congressman Louie Gohmert has written a report on just who Robert Mueller is. And we're going to post this. In fact, Adam, let's post it today. And we're going to post it again tomorrow because Louie Gohmert is going to be my guest tomorrow. And we're going to be discussing this. The bottom line is goes back in time and traces the number of people that Robert Mueller has destroyed through his investigative processes. Innocent people. Some have even, it's been death as a result. Senator Ted Stevens and how deplorable that was and disgraceful the attack. And it was later proven that the FBI used falsified evidence to destroy him right before the Obamacare vote, I might add. And then we have the story about another Congressman Walden. From the House and how they destroyed his reputation because he was bringing forth evidence that was not convenient or comfortable for the current, at the time, FBI Director Mueller. It's a trail of bodies left behind the Mueller's approach to investigative that kind of sets the groundwork for what we're seeing now. And yet the Senate panel voted to protect him. It's now going to go into the Senate floor. We'll talk about it more tomorrow. Well, there you go. That's a Monday for you. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.